Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, February 1st, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho House passes bill that would require school districts to allow employees to carry guns at school. Bill now heads to the Senate. Idaho House Health and Welfare Committee kills a bill that would repeal Medicaid expansion. Koberger attorneys make motion for change in venue, and bighorn sheep in Hell's Canyon have a new outbreak of pneumonia. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho Legislature's Joint Finance Appropriations Committee has voted in favor of giving the state's 25,000 employees a 3% pay raise next fiscal year. If the raises receive final approval, they'll be 1% across the board and 2% based on merit. The raises are the first major budget the Joint Finance Committee has approved this year after the committee approved baseline budgets for state agencies in January. Joint Finance Appropriations Committee co-chair Senator C. Scott Groh of Eagle said, "We needed this action today before we can set any more budgets." After delaying the vote for 2 days, the Idaho House passed House Bill 415 yesterday, which would require school districts to allow employees to carry guns at school. Bill sponsor Republican State Representative Ted Hill of Eagle said schools are soft targets for gun violence because most school employees are unarmed. He said his measure will give schools a chance during an active shooter incident when police are heading to the school. Hill said, "We just have to give these people the opportunity to defend themselves." The vote on House Bill 415 was 53-16 in the House. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Republican Representative Mark Sauer of Sandpoint said he believes more training for school employees is necessary. Sauer said this begs for continuous and consistent and some pretty detailed training. "That's what I was really looking for, and I'm not seeing this." However, Sauer did vote in favor of the bill. House Minority Leader Representative Elena Rubel of Boise said the decision about whether to allow school employees to carry guns should be left up to local schools. Rubel said she is unaware of many local groups or parents favoring Representative Hill's measure. She said, "I feel like there's this diehard fantasy out there where we all want to be Bruce Willis and be the good guy with the gun who whips it out and takes out the bad guy with the gun. And that's a really appealing fantasy, but that is really not how it plays out most of the time." Five Republican lawmakers joined all of the House Democrats to vote no on House Bill 415. District 6 Republicans Lori McCann of Lewiston and Brandon Mitchell of Moscow voted in favor. You're tuned to KRFP Moscow Pullman. This is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho House Health and Welfare Committee today killed a bill from Republican Representative Jordan Redman of Coeur d'Alene that would have repealed Medicaid expansion if certain conditions were not met by Idaho Health and Welfare. 61% of Idaho voters approved Medicaid expansion in a statewide initiative in 2018. Redman's bill would have required Idaho Medicaid to apply for a federal waiver to create a work requirement for Medicaid eligibility and would have capped the number of people benefiting from Medicaid expansion. If those and other requirements in the bill were not met, then the state would repeal Medicaid expansion permanently. The legislature passed a $4.5 billion Medicaid budget last year, with the bulk of that money coming from the federal government. The Idaho Press reported that Medicaid budget, which is now in effect, includes $3.2 billion in federal money, $726 million in state general funds, and $558 million in dedicated funds. Although Idahoans voted to approve Medicaid expansion for all eligible Idahoans, Redmond's bill would cap Medicaid expansion enrollment at 50,000 people, about half the 100,000 who currently use the program. Here's Representative Redmond introducing his bill in the Health and Welfare Committee.
This legislation works to put into place guardrails and accountability measures for the Department of Health and Welfare and their administration of the program. There are 11 conditions laid out in this bill that will work together to greatly reduce abuse, fraud in the program, the overall budget, and remove restrictions for low-income individuals who want to go onto the private insurance market rather than Medicaid. It will close loopholes that lead to improper and fraudulent payments, make us more diligent about cross-checking the eligibility verifications, implementing common sense guardrails for enrollment, and to ensure that able-bodied Idahoans on Medicaid that can work do work. As you know, right now, able-bodied adults in our Medicaid expansion population are not required to work, train, or volunteer, even part-time, as a condition to enrollment. There's also no limit on the amount that they can collect in a lifetime benefit. When Idaho expanded to Medicaid to the able-bodied adults under Obamacare, we were told that only 62,000 would enroll, and in reality, we know it's much higher than that today. The Idahoans I talked to who support Medicaid expansion did not have this in mind. They wanted to help individuals who hit a rough patch and needed a safety net, not long-term and lifelong government dependency. Let me be clear that this bill does not affect the funding for traditional Medicaid, which ensures our dual population that serves low-income and elderly, pregnant women, children, or the disabled. This legislation asks the federal government to give Idaho the flexibility to ensure that our state dollars are being used wisely and on the families who need it most.
And that was Republican Representative Jordan Redmond of Coeur d'Alene speaking to the House Health and Welfare Committee today. During debate over the bill, Democratic Representative Elena Rubel of Boise had a question for Redmond about how those who are paid by Medicaid to be caregivers would be impacted by the bill.
I have learned over the years that a significant number of the people in the expansion population are in the caregiver population. Here we have those who can, you know, look after a disabled loved one or something. Sometimes they can actually get some payment from the state for doing that, but it's usually a very, very small amount that keeps them below the income cap. Would those people who are caring for an elderly, perhaps a spouse with dementia, such that they are not able to go out and meet work requirements, et cetera, would they be subject to a 36-month cap such that they would be kicked off of Medicaid at 36 months?
Scott.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, great question. Those are two separate categories. So if you're a parent or caretaker, you're not in the expansion population. It's a separate category of eligibility. I call them able-bodied adults because the vast majority of them are, in terms of their ability to work. But you're right, some of them face greater challenges for work. The lifetime benefit limit does not apply to them. It only is applied to the expansion population under this bill. And that population is not, by definition, parents or caretakers, folks on the program, because otherwise they'd be in that eligibility category.
Representative Rubel, follow up.
Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm having difficulty reconciling this because I have been told that actually that's a lot of the people in the expansion population, that many of these caregivers actually are in the expansion population. They are not in the other category of Medicaid. Can you help clarify why everyone is telling me that these folks are, in fact, in the expansion population?
Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know why they would say that. There are folks in the expansion population who are, you know, might in general be parents, but there's a separate category of eligibility, a parent caretaker category.
Testimony was overwhelmingly opening nearly 2 hours of public testimony on the bill. Idaho Freedom Foundation lobbyist Fred Birnbaum spoke in favor of Redmond's bill.
My name is Fred Birnbaum with the Idaho Freedom Foundation, and we stand in support of House Bill 419. As I listened to the testimony and the excellent presentation from Scott Centurino, I think there's some misunderstandings of why this bill could be very effective. If you think about the waivers that have been submitted in the past, what incentive was there for CMS under any administration to approve them? The beauty of this bill is that the waivers, A, would be packaged, But B, if they were not approved, Medicaid could be repealed. So you actually have a dual incentive here. That's why this is such a good bill. Because, and actually we should use the Georgia example as an example. CMS will see this as an opportunity, as a package to save money, but they'll also understand that the way the bill is structured, if they say no to the waivers, then Medicaid, potentially Medicaid expansion, could be repealed. So I think this is a completely new and innovative approach that flips the script a bit. So to the extent that CMS in the past might have slow rolled waivers, now this bill puts timelines in there. And I think that's very important because the incentive to approve the waivers is there. The other thing that the waivers do as in totality is save money. And if I had more time, I could go into the details of that. But just recall, everyone, when Medicaid was put in place, as the good chairman said, it was a $400 million program. And the governor's asked this year, this is just the expansion piece, is $1.1 billion. And when Medicaid was voted in by the voters, Medicaid expansion to the able-bodied, not the traditional program, U.S. debt was $12 trillion lower than it is today. This reform is timely and it's needed. Thank you, and I'll stand for any questions.
Any questions? Representative Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Birnbaum. I have a question regarding that last statement about the $12 trillion increase. Is that all attributed to the expansion of Medicaid in Idaho?
Mr. Birnbaum.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roberts, of course it's not. The debt on November 30th, 2018, according to the Monthly Statement of Public Debt of the United States, was $21.8 trillion, and now it's $34 trillion as of December 31. But Medicaid is a component of that growth. Medicaid, the federal outlay has tripled since Obamacare, so it's now around $600 billion. So if you add all those years that we've expanded with Obamacare, it is an important component of the increase of the debt, but it's not the sole driver.
A number of doctors testified against the bill, saying their patients who are insured by Medicaid expansion might have poor health outcomes if they lose coverage. Here's some of today's testimony.
My name is Jennifer Johnson. I represent myself, and I'm from Boise. I'm also a local small business owner and a single parent to twin boys, both of whom have serious medical conditions. The small business that I run helps to provide children with disabilities with access to specialized equipment and also welcomes children of all abilities, making it a safe, inclusive space. I opened my business because I have children with disabilities and I saw the need. But like many small business owners, I'm not rich. My children and I are a part of Medicaid expansion and rely on Medicaid expansion to access the routine medical care and prescription medication we need. Medicaid expansion allows me the opportunity to work, to provide a service to the community, and to continue to contribute to Idaho's economy. Without Medicaid expansion, I would not qualify to get health coverage through the exchange with a tax subsidy, and therefore I would have to decide between purchasing expensive health insurance and with a high deductible and co-pays or go without health insurance to pay for food and housing and hope that I do not get a major illness which could lead to my death. I know the real cost and dilemma because prior to opening my business and prior to Medicaid expansion, I found myself unemployed and between jobs for several months. During that time, I received unemployment benefits which put me in the gap. I made too much for regular Medicaid, but not enough to qualify for a subsidy. If this bill passes, when one of the many provisions is not met, Medicaid expansion goes away, and I'm left back in that same gap, unable to afford high insurance premiums and deductibles. I did some quick research on the cost of health insurance on the exchange without a subsidy, and I could pay a premium of $687 and have a deductible of $17,800, which would include $50 copays and $20 for each prescription. I could get a $2,000 deductible if I paid $1,117 in monthly premiums. These are premiums I could never afford. I urge you not to move this bill forward. Please help people like me keep the coverage we rely on to ensure we can work, run small businesses without having to choose between food, housing, or medical. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Johnson? I have a quick question. you are working. So if the work requirement wouldn't affect you in this, if that work requirement is there, this wouldn't affect your eligibility. That's correct, because you are working, right?
Right. But if any of these provisions, the Medicaid expansion goes away, and then I'm back in that same gap.
Thank you.
Brittany Shipley, and I'm representing myself, and I oppose House Bill 419. Chairman and members of the committee, as a social worker and the former executive director of a mental health organization, I have seen firsthand the positive transformations in the lives of Idahoans as a direct result of the Medicaid expansion. As the parent of a child with complex co-occurring behavioral health and developmental disabilities, I am deeply concerned about the potential consequences of House Bill 419. My son, despite his able-bodied appearance, falls under the criteria listed in the bill as an able-bodied Medicaid enrollee. My son is a wonderful human with interest in animals, football stats, and video games, who lives with complex co-occurring behavioral health conditions meeting the criteria of a serious and persistent mental illness and developmental disabilities, leaving him with the functional living skills of that of an elementary-age child. My son has spent more time institutionalized in psychiatric residential treatment facilities than in his home and community over the past 4 years due to the safety concerns for himself and others. He has experienced significant challenges that have resulted in incarceration. The proposed bill's stringent parameters and enrollment caps pose a significant risk of placing individuals like my son on waiting lists. Despite the invisible nature of their disabilities, individuals like my son juggle the demands of mental health, invisible disabilities, and societal judgments while striving to maintain employment and stability. By limiting Medicaid enrollment and imposing strict criteria, we risk institutionalizing and incarcerating vulnerable individuals, resulting in higher financial and societal costs. Idaho is on track to become the sole state in the nation legally imprisoning dangerously mentally ill patients due to a lack of secure treatment options. Passing House Bill 419 will seal the fate for many Idahoans with serious and persistent mental illness, including my son. As my son approaches the age of 18, he has a promising life ahead filled with potential contributions to our community. I implore you not to foreclose on his future and the futures of countless others by passing House Bill 419. The institutionalization and incarceration of those with serious and persistent mental illness are not only financially burdensome, but also fundamentally detrimental to the well-being of our state.
Members of the committee, my name is Beth Markley. I am the executive director of NAMI Idaho. We provide support and education and advocacy for and on behalf of folks with mental illness and their families. I'm testifying in opposition to this bill, both as a representative of NAMI and as a parent of a young adult with serious mental illness. Of the Idahoans enrolled in Medicaid expansion, 1 in 4 has a primary diagnosis of serious mental illness, which could be a psychotic disorder, bipolar disorder, major depression with psychotic symptoms, or treatment-resistant depression. The Medicaid program covers many inpatient and outpatient mental health services like psychiatric treatment, counseling, and prescription medications. Medicaid expansion has allowed these people and their families access to a wider range of behavioral health services so that they can get more comprehensive treatment than they would otherwise. Early diagnosis and effective treatment of mental illness improves outcomes and reduces costs, and yet the average delay from the onset of symptoms to treatment is 11 years. The expense of treatment and shortage of resources are frequently the reasons for this delay. Prior to Medicaid expansion, our mental health system was more fragmented. Access to care was almost impossible if you couldn't afford health insurance, and often limited even if you could. For many Idahoans with a serious mental illness, Medicaid expansion provided access to consistent treatment, and for many, it was for the first time. A year ago, my son was in a state of acute psychosis. He was diagnosed with schizophrenia. He couldn't focus enough to have a short conversation or concentrate on a television show. His condition became so acute, he didn't believe we were his parents. Under Medicaid expansion, he receives the medication and treatment he needs to function. He's now able to hold a part-time job. He can drive a car. He can maintain his friendships. And he can think about the future. He hopes to go back to school, and he wants to be a mechanic. Medicaid expansion, in short, saves lives like that of my son. Please vote no on this bill. I'll stand for questions. Thanks for your time.
Betty, any questions? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Chairman. As a representative of a mental health organization, can you speak a little bit to the impact on suicide rates that the Medicaid expansion has?
Yes, frequently suicide rates and instances of mental illness go hand in hand. So treatment for things like acute depression under Medicaid expansion can seriously impact rates of suicide ideation and completion.
After the testimony, Representative Rubel made a motion to hold the bill in committee, and that motion passed on an 8-5 vote, essentially killing the bill. And you're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP Community Radio is proudly supported by Ponderosa Rentals, providing quality home rentals since 2006.
The Idaho House State Affairs Committee Wednesday approved a bill from Representative Julianne Young of Blackfoot that would redefine the word sex under Idaho law as, quote, an individual's biological sex, either male or female. Young said having clear definitions is critical to our ability to both communicate and to craft policy by clearly tying the term gender to terms such as male and female. We are now able to have clear policy discussion that clearly communicates what we intend to say. Representative Young said she consulted with conservative think tanks such as the Heritage Foundation, the Alliance Defending Freedom, and other conservative religious organizations when she developed the bill. Republican Representative Bruce Gogg of Nampa said he supports the legislation. The committee approved the bill, sending it to the full House, despite the fact all 15 who signed up to testify on the bill in committee were against it. Transgender people who testified and others said the legislation would erase and invalidate their existence under the law. They also said it disregards medical and academic consensus. Merrick Collins, a transgender man, said, "Look at my proud beard. Listen to my deepest voice. I am a man. To consider me forever a woman, despite all of this, to make me use women's facilities and group me with women legally and socially is an insult to myself and women." An airport hangar under construction near the Boise Airport collapsed Wednesday night, killing three workers and putting nine people in the hospital in critical condition. The owner of the building, Jackson Jet Center, said in a statement they did not know the reason for the building collapse. Jackson Jet Center had contracted with Big D Builders to construct the hangar. The Idaho Press reports Big D Builders had four OSHA violations in the last 10 years. Boise Area OSHA Office Director David Kearns told the Idaho Press, "As much as I prefer to have things turned around as expeditiously as possible, this is likely going to be a complex investigation with a lot of evidence to collect." Attorneys representing accused Moscow murderer Brian Koberger have petitioned the court to move the trial outside Latah County, arguing an impartial jury cannot be found in the county. Public defender Ann Taylor, who represents Koberger, told District Judge John Judge yesterday, quote, "A fair and impartial jury cannot be found in Latah County owing to the extensive inflammatory pretrial publicity allegations made about Mr. Koberger to the public by media that will be inadmissible at his trial. The small size of the community, the salacious nature of the alleged crimes, and the severity of the charges Mr. Koberger faces." According to the Daily News, Taylor said enlarging the jury pool would be ineffective because Latah County's population is too small to seat a fair and impartial jury. Taylor said, "Further, the size of the community and the interconnectedness of its citizenry is problematic and will prevent a fair and impartial pool of potential jurors." Latah County Prosecutor Bill Thompson said he opposes Taylor's motion to change the venue. Thompson said the move is unnecessary because it will be difficult to find residents in any county who are unfamiliar with the Koberger murder case. Thompson told the court there is an appropriate pool of jurors which is accessible, and the court owes it to the community to hold the trial in Latah County. Previously on Friday, Taylor and Thompson appeared before Latah County District Judge John Judge, speaking about when to hold the trial. Taylor said she wants the trial pushed to the summer of 2025 in order to have enough time to prepare the case. Thompson said the prosecution is ready to move forward this summer. Judge said he will make a decision on the motions at a later date. Wildlife biologists from Idaho, Washington, and Oregon say bighorn sheep in the northern end of Hell's Canyon have been infected with a new strain of pneumonia. Preliminary data shows the highest concentration of pneumonia is in Unit 11 between Cave Gulch Creek and the mouth of the Salmon River. Wildlife workers in the area have found 8 dead bighorn sheep who died of pneumonia. They also have found 1 dead bighorn each in Units 13 and 18 on the western side of the Snake River in Oregon and Washington. Idaho Department of Fish and Game biologist and wild sheep researcher Francis Kassirer said, "It's very, very sad. For like 5 to 8 years, we had really healthy populations. I think you always kind of realize in the back of your mind there is a good chance of this happening, but we had such a good run, we were hopeful we would keep it going." Kassirer told the Lewiston Tribune, "Biologists don't know how this particular strain got into the herds in northern Hell's Canyon, but one possibility is wild sheep moving between herds." She said it's entirely possible it traveled by bighorn sheep to get there. It's also possible there are domestic sheep with that strain that moved up here. "Right now, we are probably more focused on the bighorn sheep aspect of it, but we can't rule either out. Right now, we are in a monitoring and information gathering stage, and we are going to continue to do that over the next several months." Kassirer said the National Wild Sheep Foundation and its associated state chapters are supporting the Fish and Game Department's efforts fighting pneumonia in wild sheep. She said, "We will just have to see how bad it is. We would like to think we know a lot more now and we can recover more quickly than maybe we could before."
It's Hunger Action Day at the Washington State Capitol. Advocates are in Olympia to meet with lawmakers and call for policies that curb hunger. Head of the Anti-Hunger and Nutrition Coalition, Claire Lane, says families in the state are struggling with high food, transportation, and housing costs. Her coalition is urging lawmakers to pass a bill that would provide free breakfast and lunch for kids at school.
9 states have passed legislation across the country that provides meals for free for all students, and we really want Washington to be the 10th state.
Lane notes that Washington is among the states that approved the summer EBT program, which was passed by Congress and helps provide low-income students with food during the summer. She says the state should invest $9.6 million in the program to get it up and running this year. Lane says the state should also invest $15 million in food banks, which are seeing increased demand.
We know food banks are really, really struggling. We are getting reports from food banks that they are seeing more clients in a month than they had at the worst of the pandemic.
Along with food assistance programs, Lane says the state should also pass a bill that protects tenants, ensuring rents can't rise too fast, and other consumer protections.
We know those are the kinds of things that are sending people to food banks and making kids hungry. When you don't have stable housing, when a bigger and bigger share of your paycheck is going to rent and to gas to get to that job, people cut back on their groceries.
The Washington State Legislative Session is scheduled to adjourn on March 7th. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A Native American advocacy group is making a big push to get out the indigenous vote in this year's elections. It's hiring field organizers across the state and turning to technology. Western Native Voice calls its initiative No Vote Left Behind in 2024. The group is hiring 14 part-time organizers on reservations and in urban areas. Outreach and field director Sammy Walking Bear says the group hires locally, so the organizers will be trusted members of Montana's 7 tribal communities. She says they'll encourage people to exercise their right to vote, as historically, tribal voices have been underrepresented.
We've never been promoted to use that voice in any schooling or upbringing. It's our civic duty to vote. It affects everything in our daily lives, policy, funding.
Registering to vote requires someone to have a physical address, and many places don't on tribal reservations, so Western Native Voice is creating an app that uses online geographical location coordinates to create that physical address in an effort to increase voter registration numbers. The geolocation codes are the same ones used to create a so-called 911 address that crews use to respond to emergencies. Walking Bear says codes will also allow people who are homeless to register to vote because they'll have a physical address. She adds the geo codes will assist the communities in other ways.
Eventually, what we're hoping is that this data will be able to help the tribes finish their 911 mapping, you know, assist in any other way we can with this data and the resources we have.
Between increasing boots on the ground in local communities and using the app, Western Native Voice hopes to turn out a record number of Montana's indigenous voters in this year's elections. The field organizer application is online. This is Mark Moran for Big Sky Connection.
Free tax filing assistance is available once again in Washington State starting today. The AARP Foundation's tax aid program is available to everyone regardless of age or income level. Charles Humble is helping with tax aid efforts in Washington. He says people are grateful for the program, recalling a single mom with three kids who helped get several thousand dollars back through her tax refund.
It was just that joy of being able to see somebody get something that they have coming that they might never have gotten before because they would not have been able to figure out how to get that extra refund that they have coming.
The program has 125 sites available across Washington. Humble notes preparers can help people figure out if they qualify for the Working Families Tax Credit, for instance. Last year, more than 200,000 Washingtonians qualified for the credit, receiving $115 million in total refunds. Humble says the volunteer tax preparers are IRS certified.
They're volunteers, but they love what they're doing. They like doing taxes. They enjoy being good at it. And they couple that interest in a subject with a desire to help people. And this is a way of giving back.
Last year, tax aid volunteers assisted more than 1.5 million people nationally with their taxes. While the program can help in most cases, they may not be able to help in some complicated situations, such as returns that involve small businesses with employees or rental income. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, 80% chance of rain tonight, mainly after 10 p.m., low 40, up to a quarter inch of rain possible. 30% chance of rain tomorrow, mainly before noon, snow level 4,500 feet, cloudy, high 44. 50% chance of rain Friday night, snow level 4,000 feet, lowering to 3,400 feet after midnight, otherwise mostly cloudy, low 35. And on Saturday, 40% chance of rain and snow before noon, then a chance of rain. Snow level 2,900 feet, mostly cloudy, high 41, little or no snow accumulation expected. Current temperature 46. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Flashpoints is next at 7:30, appearing locally, where we feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area in the near future. That half-hour show starts at 7:30, and then at 8 o'clock, Maximum Rock and Roll. And at 9 o'clock, the Academy is in with Not Dark Yet. At 11 o'clock till 1 a.m., we'll have the syndicated world music show, or we'll have actually syndicated live jam band show called The Ride. So stay tuned for all that. KRFP Moscow Pullman. Have a good night.
Programming on KRFP is brought to you in part by One World Cafe, specializing in craft coffee, fresh baked pastries, artisan sandwiches, weekend brunch, wine, beer, and cider on tap. One World Cafe has a web calendar for upcoming live events and a campus location in the Janssen Engineering Building.
The Wind, Season 4, broadcast on KRFP.
I know how it feels when you
tune in to Season 4 of The Wind with Phil Corbett.
Smoking marijuana, listening to Judas Priest, contemplating suicide.
I view the Satanic Panic as two different things that are connected.
Me and the devil was walking side by side.
I believe my granddad is at a crossroad in his life.
The Satanic Panic, The Crossroads, Subliminal Messaging, a new series from The Wind. Devil Music, coming soon.
At the heart of it, colonialism needed the devil
because it needed to fill up those empty spaces because it wanted to take those empty spaces.
Mondays at 2 p.m. right here on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
If you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about rock and roll music that they like, the first thing they'll say is the beat, the beat, the beat.
Rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide.
James and Ray were chanting, do it, do it, do it. They did not even know where it came from.
Repeats Wednesday mornings at 12:30 and Saturday mornings at 2 a.m.
New episodes of the Satanic Panic Season 4 of The Wind debut Mondays at 2 p.m.